City by the Golden Gate. This is KSSR DB San Francisco, Swing Street Radio. Where the big bands swing. It's time for Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy Crime Does Not Pay with Kangaroo Court. But first, on the lighter side, let's head over to the Livermore Naval Air Station and enjoy Jack Benny. The Jack Benny program spanned some 23 years with great success all along the way. In 1932, Jack Benny was a top stage headliner when columnist Ed Sullivan asked him to appear on a CBS interview program. The show went so well that by May of 1932, he was offered his own program on NBC Blue, which eventually became a solid hit. The character portrayed by Jack's wife, Mary Livingston, was created within the first 2 years when the script called for a young female Benny fan crashing the program to read poetry on the air. Don Wilson became Benny's announcer by 1934, later joined by Rochester Eddie Anderson and Frank Nelson. On CBS, Benny continued in his 7 p.m. Sunday format until May of 1955, his last live broadcast on radio. Return with us now to those fabulous days of broadcasting with the Jack Benny Program, broadcast from the Livermore Naval Air Station in March of 1944. Another classic radio program from the audio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen, Sally Folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jamis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Grape Nuts and Grape Nuts Flakes program, coming to you from the Naval Air Station at Livermore near San Francisco, California, and starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, Rochester, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Gentlemen, let me take you behind the scenes of radio and show you how an announcer introduces a comedian to get the program off to a good start.
Go right ahead, Don.
You see, folks, we announcers depend upon holidays and special events to give meaning to our introductions.
That's right, folks. Every introduction has a meaning all its own.
For instance, last Thanksgiving, when I introduced Jack, I said, "Since this is a new Thanksgiving, we bring you an old turkey."
That's why Roosevelt went back to one Thanksgiving. He didn't want to hear that joke twice. Continue, Don.
When the Christmas holidays rolled around, I introduced Jack by saying, "We can't bring you Santa Claus, but we bring you a man who's holding the bag."
Now that joke never had a chance. It was given its primary training by Red Skelton, grounded by Abbott and Costello, and washed out by Fred Allen. All right, Don, proceed with your lecture on introductions.
When I introduced Jack on Washington's birthday, I said, "George Washington threw a dollar across the Potomac. We can't bring you that dollar, but we bring you the man who has all the others."
I'll never forget the reaction to that gag. The audience rose to their feet, bowed their heads for 1 minute, and sat down again. Continue, Don.
So you see, ladies and gentlemen, the various holidays have much to do with introducing a radio comedian. But this is not a holiday.
That's right.
So for absolutely no reason at all, I bring you Jack Benny.
Again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, I agree that today isn't exactly a holiday, but there is a reason for introducing me to these sailors here at Livermore.
There is?
Why, certainly. I used to be a sailor myself, back in 1917.
Oh, did they take men over 38 then?
Don, how could I be 38 then when I'm only 32 now? I mean, don't let this gray hair fool you. It isn't mine. So there.
But, Jack, 1917 was 27 years ago. And if you're 32 now, that means you entered the Navy when you were only 5 years old.
I was a daring little devil, wasn't I? I still have the tattoo of Shirley Temple on my arm. I really have. Anyway, let's get on with
But Jack, you were so young. What could the Navy do with you?
They made me an ensign. That's what?
An ensign at 5?
They thought I was 7 and shut up. This gray hair fooled them, too, you know. And, Don, I wish you wouldn't make me lose my temper while we're here. I'm sentimental about the Navy.
Oh, me too, Jack. You know, I wish I were a sailor. I feel that I could put my heart into that uniform.
Don. Don, you'll never... Oh, your heart. Your heart. Anyway, we better get started with the... Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
You may not remember me, but I'm Mr. London, the manager of the St. Francis Hotel.
Oh, yes. I've been staying there all week.
Well, congratulations. We got a room for you now.
Well, I'm... I'm glad. It was a little noisy sleeping in the lobby there, you know?
In the lobby? Why, Jack, wasn't it embarrassing getting undressed?
Oh, no, Don, no. They have two lobbies, one for men and one for women. And what a scramble getting dressed in the morning. Yesterday, I came out of there wearing a commander's pants, an admiral's coat, and a sailor's hat. I almost went crazy saluting myself. But, Don, no kidding. We have had a very exciting week up here, haven't we?
Oh, we certainly have.
Especially last Monday night at the Henry Kaiser shipyards when Mary launched that ship. We had a great time.
Well, I was enjoying it until the foreman at the shipyard insulted me.
Don, the foreman apologized. He told you he was nearsighted. He didn't try to launch you intentionally. It was just a natural mistake, that's all.
Hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Mary. How...
going on, boys?
Oh, we were just talking about you launching that ship Monday night.
Oh, that certainly was a thrill. I'll never forget it as long as I live.
And gosh, Mary, the way you socked the boat with that bottle. What a swing.
No kidding, Mary. You were terrific, really. The girl who launched that other ship didn't have half the swing you had.
She's never been out with a sailor.
Oh, I guess it's...
I guess the proudest moment of my life came when I launched the boat and said, "I christen thee the Edward E. Hale."
But, gee, Mary, I asked you to try...
Don, I told you 1,000 times they wouldn't let me call it the SS Great Nut.
Oh, fine. Don probably wants you to launch it with sugar and cream, you know? But then on second thought, why should he? Grape nuts are for breakfast, not for launch. My... What happened then? What happened? Oh,
brother, those are the kind of jokes that keep us moving from camp to camp.
Yeah, but you know, Mary, I can't get over how many boats they've launched here in such a short time and the amount of champagne they have to use. Imagine all that champagne falling into the water.
Then that explains it.
What?
Yesterday, I saw a man fishing. And as he pulled one out of the water, the fish shrugged his fins and said, "In my condition, who cares?"
Mary, it's all right to be silly and but don't overdo it. You know, fish can't talk.
Well, this one was so cockeyed, he didn't know what he was doing.
Well, that's different. But all in all, it has been an exciting week from the moment we crossed the bay and arrived in San Francisco.
Say, Jack, did you notice those huge Navy planes landing on the water?
Yes, and I was puzzled by those big things at the bottom where the wheels should be. What are they?
Those are pontoons.
Yes, you've seen them before, haven't you?
Pontoons?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, those are the things the automobiles use in Los Angeles during the rainy season. Well, look who's here. Alice Faye's pinup boy.
Hiya, Jackson. Hello, fellas.
Well, Phil, it's good to see you. What have you been doing all week?
Just fishing and raying them out.
What?
It's the first time I ever had champagne with bones in it.
Oh.
Say, Jackson, you want to know who's stationed at this base? I just saw him on the outside.
No, who?
Robert Taylor.
Robert Taylor?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he... Mary, come back here. No kidding. Phil, I didn't know Robert Taylor was stationed here.
Sure, he's a lieutenant. He's a flight instructor.
Well, what do you know? Now, I bet he looks handsome in his uniform, huh?
Oh, I don't know. I've seen him. When you stop to think about it, he's not so handsome.
Well, maybe not. I don't know.
When you stop to think about it, he's not so cute either.
Well, you'd know more about that than I would. I don't know.
And when you stop to think about it, he's just another man, that's all.
Well.
You know, Jack, I think they're crazy.
Who?
The girls who stop to think about it.
You were leading up to something. Phil, for heaven's sake, play a band number and get Mary out of this romantic mood.
Okay.
I was handsome, too, when I was a sailor. Played by Phil Harrison as orchestra. And Phil, I want to tell you something. You've been with me about 9 years. The first time I really enjoyed your boys. You
know? Well, thanks, Jackson, but these ain't my boys. You know, I left my regular orchestra in Los Angeles.
Oh. Oh, well, I should have known this wasn't your regular orchestra. These fellas are wearing shoes. You know?
Now, that don't mean nothing. When my boys play, they have a reason for not wearing shoes.
They have?
Sure. When they come to an 8-bar rest, they got to have something to count on, don't they?
Well, now I've heard everything, you know?
Oh, Jack, you're always picking off Phil's orchestra. They must be pretty good. After all, they're working for Slapsy Maxie.
I know. What do you think made Maxie Slapsy? And now, fellow...
All right, Jackson, all right. So my band ain't so good. What do you want me to do, fire the boys?
Well, it wouldn't be a bad idea, Phil. I mean, give them 2 weeks' notice.
Only 2 weeks' notice to fire them?
Sure.
What are you talking about? I got to give them 8 months' notice to learn a new song.
Well, then start now. I want them to know Jingle Bells by Christmas.
Listen, Jack.
What?
Phil may be too modest to brag about his orchestra, but he had an offer to play in one of the most exclusive places around here.
Really? Where?
The Rodeo Club.
Hey, that's a funny name for a night spot. I wonder why they call it the Rodeo Club.
Because after you take one drink, they throw you, hog tie you, and brand you to show that you've been waited on.
Well, gee, they must really be doing business. And now, fellas, come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
You may not remember me, but I'm Mr. London, the manager of the St. Francis Hotel.
Yes, yes, I know.
We have your room ready, but due to the shortage of help, you'll have to make your own bed.
Oh, I don't mind making my own bed.
Good. Here's a hammer and saw. Get busy.
Well, anything to help, you know, I... And now, fellas, as a special tribute to the Livermore Air Base, tonight we're going to...
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Hello, Dennis. As I was saying, fellas, tonight we're going to...
How are you?
Fine, kid. Fine, fine. As a special tribute to the Livermore Air Base...
Gee whiz, Mr. Benny, you haven't seen me all week and you don't even say, hiya, Dennis, old kid, old pal. Gee, I'm glad to see you. What have you been doing?
Okay, hiya, Dennis, old kid, old pal. Gee, I'm glad to see you. What have you been doing?
Nothing.
Just as I thought. Tonight, fellas, we're going to try...
Except last Tuesday.
What?
Last Tuesday night, I had a date with a beautiful blonde.
Dennis.
And oh boy, did I paint the town red. The Bal Tavern, the Gay 90s, the Top of the Mark, and the 1079 Club.
Wow. Hey, you. Listen, kid, you, Dennis, you really were stepping. Did your girl have a good time, too?
I don't know. She didn't show up.
Well, of all the things...
Dennis, there's no fun going to all those places by yourself.
There isn't?
Of course not. And another thing, kid, how can you afford to go to those expensive nightclubs?
I don't check my hat.
Well, how can you save money that way?
Jack, this may come as a surprise to you, but when people get their hats back from the check room, they're supposed to leave the girl a tip.
Oh, yeah. Say, you know, girls are lucky. They don't have to check their hats.
Of course not.
Well, anyway, Dennis, getting back to... Say, I wonder...
Stop thinking about it. You'd look silly wearing a lady's hat.
I wasn't thinking about it at all. I was just thinking how silly it was for Dennis to go to all those nightclubs without his girl.
Well, gee, Mr. Benny, I was having so much fun, I didn't even realize she wasn't there.
Well, when did you miss her?
When I went to kiss her goodnight.
Well, at least it didn't spoil your evening. I'm glad you got around, kid.
Yeah, I went to one place yesterday afternoon where they threw me, hog-tied me, and branded me.
Oh, the Rodeo Club.
No, the Income Tax Bureau.
Oh, yes, yes. March the 15th does roll around. Well, anyway, now that you're here, kid, how about singing a song for the boys, huh?
Okay.
Okay, well...
There's no one as pretty as Kitty. My blue-eyed Kitty, oh, too. When she walks along on the street, fellas shout, here, pretty Kitty, blue-eyed. You can hear him shout every time she goes out, here, pretty Kitty, blue-eyed. But she looks at nobody. She's lonely in New York. Oh, she loves a doughboy named Johnny O'Rourke. That's why she'll never hear anyone till shout, I'm here, pretty Kitty, blue-eyed. Her eyes are like the blue skies of Erin. Her beauty is something quite fairy. There's no one as pretty. As pretty as Kitty, she's got the whole town staring. When she walks along on the street, fellas shout, Billigadoosha, Shinnamarusha, Balderal, the blue eyes. You can hear him shout every time she goes out, Billigadoosha, Shinnamarusha, Balderal, the blue eyes. But she goes with no boy, she's got her memory. Oh, she loves a doughboy who's now overseas. That's why eyes, she'll never hear anyone till he'll shout, I'm here, pretty kitty, blue eyes. There's no one as pretty as pretty, my darling kitty.
Blue Eyes, sung by Dennis Day for the first time on the air. Dennis, that was beautiful.
Thank you. Say, Mr. Benny, I wanted to talk to you about something. You know, when I was at the Income Tax Bureau, I got all mixed up.
You did? Why?
Well, my salary is $35, isn't it?
That's right.
And because my song only takes 2 minutes, you told me it amounts to $186,000 a week.
That's right, Ken.
Then what do I pay tax on, $35 or $186,000?
Dennis, $186,000 is a theoretical figure. You're not really getting that much.
I'm not?
No.
No wonder my girl didn't show up.
Dennis, let me try to...
Wait a minute, Jackson. Wait a minute. You better let me handle this. I'll explain this whole thing to the kids.
Oh, fine, fine.
Now, look, Dennis, theoretically, Jackson is right.
What?
Now, the $186,000 is your hypothetical compensation. Which means that your remuneration is based on the limited time of your productivity.
Oh.
Now, the element is the question to segregate the actual from the supposition.
Oh, uh-huh. Brother.
Now, so summing it all up and then condensing it to simple phraseology...
Yes?
You're a bum. Phil.
Hypothetical remuneration, phraseology. Phil, for heaven's sake, where did you learn all those big words?
Oh, I was up with them all night. And Jackson, the next time you give me a speech like that to read, I'm going to punch you right in the nose.
Just once, I wanted the people to know that you can pronounce words even though you don't know what you're talking about, you know?
Oh, you and your educated writers, you.
Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
You may not remember me, but I'm Mr. London, the manager of the St.
I know, I know, I know.
You lucky man, I now have a room for you completely furnished.
Oh, fine, fine. Thank you. That's well.
I'm glad.
Tell me, do I have a tub?
Yes, but if you button your coat, nobody will notice it.
That I can't understand at all. Oh, my goodness, I forgot to ask him something.
I'll get him back. Oh, Mr. London! Mr. London! Here he comes, Jack. Mr. Benny wants to talk to you.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
You may not remember me, but I'm as
never mind that. Now, here's what I'd like to know, Mr. London. Do you serve breakfast in the room?
Why, yes, certainly. You can have anything you want.
Good. Now, tomorrow morning for breakfast, I want grape nuts flakes.
Why?
Ooh, what he said.
Why? I'll tell you why. Because...
They're malty rich, sweet as a nut, and have whole grain nourishment.
That's why.
That's telling them, Jack.
And furthermore...
They're a thrifty buy in the big 12-ounce economy-sized package, and they're not racing.
Either.
Telling him, Jack.
And another thing.
I met a sailor friend of mine here, and he told me that he likes to start his day with a big bowl of grape nut flakes. Because his motto is, eat a good breakfast, be a better God.
Yes, sir. And do you realize that grape nut flakes are an American favorite?
Why?
Why? Are you crazy?
No, I'm London, manager of the St. Francis.
Peculiar fellow, but likable. Now, where were we before he came in?
I was a bum.
Oh, yes, yes. No, Dennis, you're not a bum. And let's not start that again. Let's get on with the... I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rock. Yes.
Rock, Rochester, what's the idea of calling me long distance from Beverly Hills?
I'm making out my income tax and I'm stuck.
Well, what's sticking you?
The first line. The one that says gross income. What's that?
Well, that means your entire income. For example, Rochester, I pay you $2,000 a year. That means your gross income is
$2,000. $2,000?
Yes.
Boss, is that theoretical, hypothetical, or did the operator give me the wrong number?
Don't worry, you haven't got the wrong number. Now look, Rochester, in figuring your income tax, put down all you made, then list your deductions, such as contributions, donations, bad investments.
Bad investments? Does that include money lost while on bended knee?
No, it doesn't. It has nothing to do with shooting craps. Anyway, I thought you told me Lady Luck always smiles at you.
She does, but yesterday she forgot to use Irium.
Well, it serves you right for playing with strangers.
This wasn't a stranger, boss. You know my friend Sam?
Yes.
Well, he's got the only paradise you can locate with radar.
You mean they're trick dice?
Trick? When you roll them out, one comes up 7, the other 11, so there's nothing to be in doubt about.
Well, this certainly ought to teach you a lesson.
Uh-huh. Yesterday's show was a bad day for us.
Us?
Yeah, that green sport coat of yours fits Sam perfectly.
Rochester, you mean to say you lost my sport coat in a crap game?
I couldn't help it, boss.
You couldn't help it? You had the nerve to gamble with my coat?
I was trying to win back your tuxedo.
Well, lastly, Rochester, you better have my clothes back by the time I come home.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, say, boss.
Now what?
If you go to another luncheon, will you do me a favor?
Sure, what is it?
Bring me back 2 cases of fish.
2 cases of fish?
Yeah, and when you pull out the hooks, cork up the holes. I don't want to lose any of it.
Okay, I will. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Got it every time.
From March 12th of 1944, it's been the Jack Benny Program, broadcasting from Livermore Naval Air Station. In a moment, Crime Does Not Pay with Kangaroo Court, as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
Radio, remember radio.
If you have a favorite show or serial you'd like to hear on an upcoming edition of Radio Yesteryear, let us know. Email requests at radioyesteryear.org. That's requests at radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Crime Does Not Pay was a syndicated program produced by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, based on the famous short films of the same name, first heard on WMGM New York in October of 1949, with Donald Buca as star. The program told of perpetrators of crime, often innocent kids, who just got in too deep. It ran from 1951 as a WMGM show, picked up by Mutual beginning in January of 1952 and running through December of that year. Ira Marion wrote the scripts, and Marks B. Loeb directed. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with Crime Does Not Pay and Kangaroo Court from February of 1950. Another classic radio program from the audio vault of yesteryear.
Crime Does Not Pay.
Can I give it to you, Spieler?
I know they are.
That's the thanks I get. Am I your lawyer or anything?
Sure you are.
And do I do the worrying or don't I? What's the mouthpiece for? To do the worrying? Take the headache.
No, I do for a bellyache. From lead or an ice pick.
Cut it out, never.
Do something for me, Spieler. Will you, huh?
Sure, Charlie. Natch, what?
Make him give me the rope. I black out first thing. I'll never feel nothing. That's the easy way. Make him do it that way, Spieler. Make him. You got it. That's all you got it.
In the interest of good citizenship and law enforcement, we present Crime Does Not Pay,
based on the famous Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer series of short subjects. In just a moment, you will hear Kangaroo Court, starring Richard Durr. Now, Crime Does Not Pay, starring Richard Durr as Charlie the Traveler Thompson in Kangaroo Court. Organized crime is a vast hierarchy, from the remote leaders on the top down through the district bosses to the everyday hoodlums at the bottom. Any organization as huge as this must be governed by law. There is law in organized crime. Organized law with a code, with lawyers, courts, judges, and executioners. Punishment follows conviction swiftly, certainly. Charlie the Traveler Thompson knew the law of this underworld in which he lived, but the night Charlie and his best pal, Jack Spieler Riley, visited the store on the corner of 6th and Main, the law was far from Charlie's mind.
Sure this is the joint, Charlie?
Sure as I know my name.
This rat trap don't look like nothing Ernie'd be interested in.
Wait. The old man will be out in a minute. He lives in the back.
Anything you say, buddy.
Gentlemen, what can I do for you?
Well, for one thing, you can open the cash register.
Please, I'm an old man. I have so little money.
I should slug him now or later, Charlie?
No, no, completely. Please, wait. I open the register.
Okay, Spieler, empty the till while I keep him covered.
Chicken feed. What a nickel joint this is. Okay, I got it.
All week I work for what is in that drawer.
Save it. Now show us the board and the floor in the back room.
The board in the floor?
You heard me. Give out.
Now I get it.
There is no board.
You want more? Start moving.
I have nothing, nothing.
Cut it. The boss knows this joint. He knows what's been going on here for years.
I have nothing, nothing.
I'm sick of hearing you whine. Go to work, Spieler.
It's about time. Now take your medicine, Foxy Grandpa. Talk one way or the other.
No, don't hit me. Not with a blackjack. No, don't hit me.
Back room, Spieler. Count three boards on the right-hand wall.
Got it. Hey, it's loose.
You betcha it's loose.
Crying out loud. Look at that roll.
Yeah, the old boy didn't believe in banks. He's got two houses he rents up on the west side. Ernie said there must be 25 G's in that roll. Had the joint cased. Let's go.
Right.
Come on, Spieler. Let the old bum alone.
He ain't breathing. Must be dead.
Okay, so what? So you hit him too hard. Let's roll. He don't need his dough no more.
A good job, boys. Too bad you had to kill the old boy, though. He was a real character.
He lived too long anyway. He wasn't having any fun.
Except maybe counting his kale, right, Ernie?
Could be. Some of these cops have a way of getting fond of bums like that.
Feed on, boss?
Not exactly. Nobody knew about the role except the old man and us. Even the cops know he never had much in the register and the papers and sodas.
Oh. Well, it's okay then, huh?
If you left the place clean.
Sure we did. Wore gloves the whole time.
Yeah, I told Spieler he shouldn't get no splinters from the floor. He didn't know what I was talking about till I told him to pry up that floorboard. Everything's copacetic then, Ernie?
Sure there were no slips.
Positive.
Absolutely.
Okay, then in about 5 years, the Sunday papers will run the story of a dead soda jerk. Another unsolved crime.
Well, what's next, boss?
Nothing urgent.
Good. You know, I think maybe a change of climate would do me good.
What, again?
Yeah. Yeah, I ain't never seen California.
Charlie the Traveler. What could you do in California you can't do here?
Get a sunburn in February. Okay, Ernie?
Sure, only why not Florida?
Oh, I was in Florida last year. I want to see if the California oranges is better.
Oranges or tomatoes, Charlie?
No, oranges. Tomatoes is all alike any place.
Hello?
Yeah?
Charlie Thompson?
Talking.
This is Joe Walker.
California Walker?
Nobody else but. Want to see you, Charlie. When can you come over?
Anytime you say. Glad you called. I've been wondering when some of the boys would say, welcome to Sunny Cal.
Welcome to Sunny Cal, eh? How about 3 this afternoon?
Sounds great.
Good, good. My place is on the Sunset Strip. You can't miss it. It's called Joe's Place. Neon's 10 feet high.
I'll be there. See you later, Joey boy. Quite a layout you got here, Joe.
Well, nothing better. You know Cash Liggett?
Hi, Cash.
Hi.
Fellas, this is the place for a vacation. Another 2 days and I'll join the local Chamber of Commerce.
Good. Glad you like it. Well, Charlie, I have a job for you.
Me? Nix, I'm on a vacation.
Now, it needs your slick touch, traveler.
Yeah, pineapple job.
Look, fellas, I'm on vacation.
And when you're in my territory, you take orders from me. You know the law.
Sure, same like I was back in Ernie's district. Then he's got control over me.
But I need a rest. I've been working all year.
Yeah, one job will just keep you in training.
I don't want it.
Well, you'll do it. That's an order. We need a guy from out of town. And you're it. You understand?
Okay. Don't get sore. Where and when?
Tonight's as good as any.
I'll have to borrow a piece. I didn't bring no tools for a vacation.
Cash?
We got a dozen. One will do the trick.
What about a car?
Yeah, we got a beaut. Cash stole the day before yesterday.
Is it that hot?
Well, it won't be missed too much. Owner has 2 others. It's all gassed up and waiting. Take him over to see it, Cash. And if he's a good boy and does his job right, maybe we'll let him drive it back east. Think of the plane fare you'll save. Charlie, my boy.
This bus stolen, too?
No. Registered, all legal and proper in Joe's name.
Good. I'm always a little nervous riding a hot car in broad daylight.
We got so many cars out here, nobody notices. Once in a while, some rookie cop will try to make a name for himself, but that's about all.
Much farther to your drop?
Drop?
Where you got the car for me?
Oh, next block, after the traffic light.
I don't see nothing but a parking lot.
Nothing else to see. We don't have to worry about freezing radiators out here.
Ain't you taking an awful chance? What about the plates?
We don't worry about details like that. All right, come on, let's go, chum. I got the parking ticket, and after you drive her out, I'll take this one back to the boss.
I'm with you.
You see, you got to learn how we operate. No sense fooling with fancy plans around here.
So I see.
Afternoon. Come to your car, gentlemen?
Right. We left it here a couple of days ago for safekeeping.
Yes, sir. Your ticket, please.
Well, what'd you do? Change your system? He used to ask for the tickets as we drove out.
Yes. What'd you say,
Cash? Here's the ticket, son.
Thank you. If you'll take your car, I'll stamp the ticket and you can pay me as you leave. That's our new system, sir. It won't delay you.
I don't like it, Cash. The car's renewed the ticket. There's somebody watching us from the gatehouse.
Hey, the car's gone. It was a 46 Caddy. I left it over there.
Scram, Cash. It stops in the gatehouse waiting for us to move further inside.
Yeah. Well, the lousy brakes.
See, Cocky, stop him!
Put the spot at the bus. Set a trap. Come on, get in the car, quick.
Oh, brother. I ain't run like that since the last time I swiped apples from a fruit dealer back home.
Lose ourselves in traffic. He'll never catch us. And he won't dare shoot.
Won't they?
Well, once I hit the boulevard. Now, hang on. Here we go. Now, what do we got to watch out, boys? Red lights and traffic cuts.
Phew. What close.
Well, I'm sorry, Charlie. Thing like this hasn't happened in years.
Yeah. Believe me, Cash, it never happens back east.
Oh,
We'll get to another car, Charlie. Now, don't worry about that.
Yeah, I know. You got a million of them.
Ah, cut that out, will you?
Well, why should I risk my neck? And on my vacation, too.
Okay, wise guy. How would you do it?
Well, first, I'd get a drop.
What is this drop thing? You said that before.
A small private garage outside town's best.
Go on.
Then I'd swipe the car and stash it in the drop for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and then?
Then I'd swipe the plates on Monday from a weekend driver's bus someplace. Put them on the hot car and drive any place I please for 5 days and nobody'd know the difference.
Oh. Fancy, ain't they, back east? Eh, boss? Yeah. We lead the simple life out here. We'll get your car, give you the rod and a pineapple. You'll do the job, Thompson. Our way.
You got another thing coming, Walt. Not me.
You want me to bash him, boss? No. You'll do it. Let him yell first.
I'm getting the next plane back east.
Don't try it, Thompson. You know the law.
So what?
So plenty. You walk out on me, you'll never get away with it.
Won't I? I'm walking, ain't I? And I don't see nobody trying to stop me, neither.
In just a moment, Crime Does Not Pay will continue with Kangaroo Court. Now we continue with Crime Does Not Pay, starring Richard Durr in Kangaroo Court. Charlie the Traveler headed straight for the airport from Joe's place with its big 10-foot neon sign and took the first plane possible for the east, a ruined vacation behind him. Charlie knew there might be trouble ahead, so he holed up quietly and advised only his pal, Jack the Spieler, of his exact whereabouts.
Who is it?
Me, Spieler. Let me in, Charlie.
Anybody with you?
No, of course not. Let me in, will you?
Okay. Hold everything.
Hey, why all the bolts and stuff? You afraid of mice, friend?
No, of lice. I'm out west.
Didn't think you were afraid of anything.
Sit down. That California walker has a nasty temper. You can't tell that bum anything.
No, he wouldn't dare send anybody here to get you. Not unless it was all legal.
He might. What's new in town?
Well, not much. Except you're in Dutch. Upstairs.
With Ernie? I didn't do nothing to him.
Oh, not Ernie, especially.
Look, pal, what are you trying to tell me?
Well, here it is. Straight. Ernie told me to bring you in.
Bring me in? What for?
How should I know? I don't ask questions. I do like I'm told.
Yeah, I know.
Well, get your coat, fella. We're going downtown. Hey, get that. Me making noises just like a cop.
Have a nice vacation, Charlie.
It was good and lousy.
You came back awful fast.
I didn't like the people at that resort.
They don't like you either.
That squares everything, then.
Only it doesn't.
Why not?
Because you broke the law, that's why. Because you had to be a wise guy and tell a district boss how to run his business. Because when he wouldn't let you do things your way, you ran out on him.
They're nuts out there, honest, aren't they? Nuts. The way they tried to do things.
Makes no difference. You refused an order from the boss in whose territory you were operating.
I was on vacation. You know that.
I'm told you disobeyed orders. You broke the law. You're up on charges, Charlie.
Me? On charges?
At last, something's penetrated your thick skull. I get this. Spieler here's your lawyer. He'll defend you. Joe Walker's coming on to press the charge himself. Rick Carson is coming in from Chicago. Phil Jackson from Pittsburgh. Mike Davis from Boston. Bill Kinoy from Louisville. And Don Welch from Cleveland. The five of them and myself are the judges, Charlie. The trial is set for 1 week from Tuesday. All right, Walker. Is that your evidence?
That's it. And that's all I need.
Any questions from the court?
If I may, Ernie?
Of course, Rick.
What penalty do you want if we convict Thompson, Joe?
Nobody crosses me that way. I want to cement jacket on him.
You're pretty rough, aren't you?
Well, it's my grievance, Carson. What would you do if he behaved this way in Chicago?
All right, no further questions.
Anybody else? All right, Walker, sum up your case.
The summations don't take place until the defense witnesses speak their pieces.
You're rather familiar with court procedure, aren't you, Walker?
Yeah, what if I am?
Never mind. Only we set the procedure here. Start your summation.
May it please the court. I want this man, Charlie Thompson. I intend to have him. You heard my witness. Cash Liggett was present in my office when the defendant refused an order. More, the defendant deliberately walked out of my office and out of my territory in direct contradiction to my orders and completely against our law. The very fact that his counsel failed to cross-examine my witness is, well, to me at least, admission of guilt. Defense counsel knows that my witness is telling the exact truth. I ask this court to find the defendant guilty and suggest a sentence of death at the hands of the injured party.
The defense will proceed. All right, Spieler.
Thank you. Gentlemen of the court, I'm here in this job on account of being both Charlie Thompson's best pal and a fellow who knows the circumstances of the case. Let me say from the beginning, that first of all, I didn't call no witness for the defense on account of the fact that the only such witness is dead. Thanks, boss. But more about that a little later. Second of all, I didn't waste your time and mine cross-examining a Cash Liggett on account of if he's telling the truth, he'll stick to what he says. And if he's lying, he'll stick to what he says.
No joke, Spieler.
It's no joke, boss. Not to Charlie, it isn't. But to get on with the case, it's a fact that my client went out to the coast for a vacation. While he was there, he tried to obey the orders of Mr. Walker. But it's a fact, too, that he almost got a dose of lead when the operations of the prosecution witness led him right into a trap the cops set over a hot car.
Is this true, Riley?
So help me, it's the truth. And after it happened, only after it happened, my client tried to show Mr. Walker a safe way to operate, the way the defendant has been operating for a long time. But no, Mr. Walker wanted it all done his way, and the defendant felt he had to refuse.
Are you admitting guilt, Counselor?
Yes and no, Mr. Carson.
Yeah, that's a really legal answer. You should have been a lawyer.
They don't call me the Spieler for nothing, Mr. Carson.
Get on with it, Spieler.
Yes, boss. Now let me say this. The defendant would never have walked out and probably would never have refused the orders if he hadn't been under a terrible mental strain. You see, there's outside things in this case that Mr. Walker don't know about. What he don't know, and what you don't know, is that just that morning, the defendant, he had a telegram from home. His old mother was dying. She's the dead witness I spoke about, gentlemen. Because when Charlie Thompson walked out of Mr. Walker's place, he went straight to the airport, flew straight home, and had the final satisfaction of making his mother happy in her last moments on this here earth. Yeah, sure. My client acted out of turn, but he had a reason. And this is the truth, gentlemen. And more, I'll promise you myself, if you'll let some off this time, that I'll see to it personal that he toes the mark from here on in. Charlie's too good a man to dump in a river for one mistake outside his own district and when he was under such a terrible mental strain. That's our defense, gentlemen. That's all it is. The truth and a promise to obey in the future. Thank you for listening.
You're out too long, Spieler. Too long.
Don't mean nothing. They probably start a friendly game. Anyhow, when a legit jury is out like this, they're generally hung, and it's a new trial.
The only thing that's hung around here is going to be me. Get me a piece, Spieler. Get me a piece so I can get them before they get me.
The trouble is, if it's guilty, I'll have to do you. That's the law, Charlie.
Oh, you wouldn't, Spieler. Not me. Not your pal. Think of the jobs we've done together. You wouldn't. You couldn't.
If I get told, I gotta. You'll understand, Charlie. Stop walking up and down like that. You act like it was stir crazy.
Yeah, I'm going nuts. Why don't they come out? Why don't they make up their minds? I gotta get out of here.
Now, will you shut up?
They're gonna get me to a speaker. I know they are. Nobody ever gets over one of these courts.
That's the thanks I get. Am I your lawyer, ain't I?
Sure, you
and
are.
And do I do the worrying or don't I? What's the mouthpiece for? To do the worrying. Take the headaches.
I'm due for a bellyache. From lead or an ice pick.
Cut it out, never.
Do something for me, Spieler. Will you, huh?
Sure, Charlie. Nice. What?
Make him give me the rope. I black out first thing. I never feel nothing. That's the easy way. Make him do it that way, Spieler. Make him, you gotta. That's all you gotta.
Cut it out, will you? Verdict ain't in yet. Jury's still out.
Yeah, some jury. The judges are the same guys.
Ernie will fight for you. You should have heard him take down Walker. Too bad the law don't let you hear your own trial.
It'll be 5-1 against Ernie. 5-1 against him. And me. 5-1. I'm going out, Spieler. I gotta get some air.
Don't try no run out now. They'll find you. You know that.
Will they, Spieler? No matter where, will they?
Don't try nothing smart, Charlie.
Just want some fresh air. That's all. I won't be long. You'll find me again, Spieler. I'll be back. If I stay here, I'll go altogether nuts. But I'll be back, Spieler. Don't worry.
Where's the defendant, Spieler?
Yeah, we rather like the idea of having him hear the verdict in person.
He's gone for a walk, gentlemen. But I'll represent him.
Well, get on with it. I don't want to catch a plane.
We're all leaving before night. All right, shall we go ahead, gentlemen?
All right, sure, Mr. Carson. You might as well. One way or the other, he'll find out.
Yeah, he'll find out.
As presiding judge of this court, it's my duty to announce the verdict. After due deliberation and taking into consideration the extenuating circumstances of the case, this court finds the defendant not guilty.
What?
Yippee!
What was it, Spieler? What'd they get?
Not guilty. They found you.
I got off.
Get off this rap, Thompson. But your pals won't get off there.
Ha! I'm getting out of here.
Hey, cut it out, all of you. Don't try anything. We got enough Tommy guns to cut down our regiment.
What'd you do, Charlie? Hey. For the love of Pete, what'd you do?
I figured I was a gone pigeon, so I spilled my guts to the cops and brought him here.
Why, you dirty, filthy...
Shut up, you.
For that lousy stoolie, I saved his life.
Please. If I'd only known. If you'd only come back sooner. It's your fault, not mine. I couldn't stand it. I just couldn't stand it.
All right, on your feet, all of you. The wagon's waiting.
And all the time it was not guilty.
Richard Durr, who has starred as Charlie Thompson in Kangaroo Court, will be back with you in just a moment.
But in the end, crime does not pay.
Thank you, Richard Durr. Crime Does Not Pay is written by Ira Marion and directed by Mark B. Loeb, with music composed and conducted by John Gart. Technical advisor is Burton B. Turkus. The events, characters, and names used in the story you've just heard are fictitious. Any similarity is purely coincidental.
From February of 1950, it's been Crime Does Not Pay with Kangaroo Court. I'm afraid that's all the time we have today, but join us again next week this same time and invite a friend to listen. Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. The comedy, mystery, fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Delta Radio. I miss you so.
Copyright the Swing and Big Band Preservation Society, Incorporated. All rights reserved.